We're beginning the very start of a new school year as far as the move-in date has begun, and we're beginning to see new faces. And we're really looking forward to get acquainted with our students and our parents. And it's very important to us as a congregation to keep in touch and really make connections, particularly with our new students each year. If we don't already have your email address and name, and when you're coming our way, we've got a pretty good list, but we would like to have it because we'll be sending some emails out to you and other students and parents. If we don't have your contact information, we'd love to have it as well. We want to have a relationship with both, and we trust that this congregation will be a place where your young person can be encouraged and grow, and we're very excited. We're expecting a record number of students with us this year, and there's a lot of things that go on here. Tonight, we're going to have a new website. It's auchurch.com that is being built. It's going to be directed for our members, but there's a lot of information once those that identify with us can get, and information and directories and other things along those lines. So we hope you can be back tonight for that and get some additional information for the entire congregation of some of the things we're trying to do and to stay in touch with one another. This morning I want to talk about a lesson that actually I generally preach a different lesson than this one, but in almost in every meeting I hold in the last 2 years, pretty well in a meeting, I talk about a subject that for years, for whatever reason, seems to be something we don't want to talk about, we tend to hide from, and that is dealing with the subject of depression. I have found most people that I've been close to in the church at some time or another have experienced that, and certainly within relatives and friends, I've seen good people go through struggles and difficulties, and certainly even if you don't have a more chronic issue with depression, in times we're going to face issues. We're going to face the valleys of life where we're going to deal with this particular question, whether it be a temporary fear or calamity or whether it's really a way of life that one has to struggle with. I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about it in more than one lesson. There's just a lot here, I think, that would profit us from the study of the Scriptures and from understanding about how we're put together. You know, there's times when I was a young guy, I used to think that, you know how us guys are, emotion is weakness. You know, we kind of like to deny our emotion and think that, you know, somebody crying or something like that, that's not manly, you know. And I was joking with somebody last night about that. He was talking about on his Facebook page that he'd watched one of these Hallmark movies with his wife and they both cried, and I threatened to revoke his man card from actually posting that on Facebook, you know. So sometimes as guys, we don't like to admit about emotion in place of it, but we're all put together that way. And it's not a weakness. It's something that we deal with. It's something that the Scriptures address abundantly. Now, one of the things that I'm going to talk about more so than the temporary times of crisis and hurt, I'm going to spend a lot more time in these lessons to talk about a more chronic issue of what may happen over accumulation of time of things learned in the home and maybe of terrible events that some have experienced. And as a result, they will struggle with things as they get older. We want to talk about that as well in the course of the study. I'm not here to try to teach you psychology, okay? We're going to talk this morning about a living faith. We're going to talk about how God helps us with hurts. We're going to talk about an abundant number of scriptures. There's more than we could cover this morning about what do you do when your spirit is overwhelmed, when it's becomes difficult to function, when it becomes very difficult to even have the energy to do basic things. We all will go through that at times. Some more than other. What do the Scriptures teach? One of the things I've just to make a note of, brethren, the way we conduct our homes, the environment that we give our children, the kind of home that our children can come out of, we can bless them or we can cripple them in terms of how we do that. We're not going to talk about the home this morning and the detail that we have in other lessons, but I just want to mention this, that many times those who have a chronic problem, dealing with emotions, dealing with depression, it is not uncommon to see generations of families of issues struggling from ways that are taught in the home of communication to buried anger. Ephesians 6:4, the Bible gives us two possibilities in the raising of our children here. And it says, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord." You know, I've learned over the years that not every home that has a good reputation from brethren has been the kind of home that it ought to be. Now, brethren, I realize all of us will have faults and weaknesses in our homes. But I've had people close to me that I've known, and maybe there was great reputation given to the father or some other person within the home, and they personally would say, well, you just don't know what kind of home we had. And there's a way to conduct a home where there's discipline and there's teaching, and there's a way to conduct a home where there is my way or the highway, and you create anger and you teach people to deny that which is obvious and bury their anger. And those kind of homes are going to create generations oftentimes of problems. That's not my thrust today, but that is going to be a major element as we look at oftentimes why there are struggles. By the way, and I'll talk about more about this next week, about addictions and depression, but most alcoholics, most people that have issues with addictions oftentimes are also dealing with depression. And that's one reason why that alcohol is such a threat to our young people, is that you can get caught up and you can come into a situation where you're feeling bad about yourself and you try to self-medicate and try for the escape of that. And I've oftentimes, as I've dealt with people from those backgrounds, and I didn't learn this for years, but many times those addictions have these other issues resulting in depression in their background, oftentimes coming from the home. It is not uncommon to see alcoholism to go through generations. And that'll be something that we'll talk about somewhat. But the thrust of our study today is I want to try to equip you from the Scriptures with what a living faith can do for you, regardless of your background, regardless of your circumstances, and of how, whether it is a temporary crisis you're facing, but how you can take your thoughts and place them before God and be able to overcome whatever struggle that the world puts before you. In 1 John 5 and verse 4, it says, "For whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God?" Now, I'm not going to tell up here glibly, "Oh yeah, you read this verse and everything's fine." No, what I'm going to talk to you about this morning is a wrestling match. A match where at one hand you want to think this way and then on the other hand you see what God wants you to think. And there's a struggle as you're trying to overcome the various darkness and emotion that you have and be able to see things as God sees it. Let's talk about that this morning. Let's first off talk a few things about depression. First off, there are some fundamental truths about depression. Most depression, and again, I'm not a psychologist, not trying to pretend to be one, but in my experience at working with people, that most depression I find that it becomes chronic is a product of buried anger. As I've suggested earlier, you learn in the home that you don't express the differences you have. You learn to be quiet, you learn to bury your anger, you can't communicate with those that you love, and you know, that may work while you're young. You may get through that while you're young, but as one person says, you start burying things like that, there will be a resurrection. And it'll come up later in life, and it'll create issues in your home. And you may have, again, it may not be anything that you've done wrong, it may be the environment that you came out of. But nonetheless, there are consequences of that. You see, homes oftentimes that do not face problems, deal with them honestly, where you feel like you can communicate with your dad and your mother, if you don't have that, it creates a very pattern for you to deal with the problems in life. I'm going to tell you, in life, it's really good to identify a problem, to see a problem, to resolve a problem, put it ahead and move on. Many people can't do that. And that's where you start accumulating things. And again, as I said, in time, it bears fruit in your life. You know, there are short-term situations like this. You see some of the greatest men of faith in the Bible going through times of depression. Let me say clearly, depression is not a sin. Now, understand that. Going through times where you're overwhelmed, going through times where you have a hard time seeing to take the next step, going through emotional times where your energy is taken from you, that is not a sin. We'll all go through struggles. I don't know what it may be. It may be physical. It may be emotional. This is just part of life. But I look at the great prophet Elijah in 1 Kings 19 and verse 2. I mean, he had had an exhausting day up to this point. He had confronted the prophets of Baal, and no doubt in my mind, he was so disappointed with the children of Israel. He was so disappointed in 1 Kings 18, where he basically throws out a challenge, and there's Israel sitting on their hands, their eyes bugging out, and they're afraid to take a stand for God. Of course, he has the confrontation with the prophets of Baal. Fire comes down from heaven and destroys the altar, and the prophets of Baal are slaughtered. It's a great victory for God, and the people are proclaiming, "The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God." Well, you should have known that earlier. I can imagine Elijah with the emotions of that day and the physical stress of that day. And then after he did exactly what God said, tired, physically tired, he gets this message. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So let the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time." I don't know why this message had the effect it did on Elijah. But he broke. You can see his spirit break here. And the next thing you know, he's ready to die. Verse 3. "And when he saw that, he arose and ran for his life, and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there." Verse 4 says, "But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree, and he prayed that he might die, and he said, 'It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I'm no better than my father's.'" Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever got to the point in time you wanted to preach your own funeral and you kind of was thinking, "Well, people are going to miss me when I'm gone"? Have you ever got to the point where you didn't feel like eating and you didn't feel like there was anybody that cared about you? I won't read the rest of the passage, but you can read the rest. There's several times he says, "I want to die." There's several times he says, "I'm the last one left serving God." And that wasn't reality. But he was going through that valley of depression. You create your own world. You become the center of things and you feel miserable. God even had to feed him, and God finally got him back on his feet. Got him busy, got him back into life. But you see, all at times we'll go through those periods where we pull back and we've got this reality and we just feel miserable. Now Elijah was able to come out of it. He came out of it because of the will of God, and we can understand why he got to where he was. But let me say another thing too, because I want to make it very clear. I'm not trying to take the place of the medical profession, and there's a legitimate place for the medical profession in working with people with various problems that relate to emotions. I'm not just giving a blanket endorsement of everything the medical profession does, but I'm going to tell you, sometimes you can have depression unrelated to the things that happen to you. I've seen some people go through surgery and they have certain medications for them, and they go through serious surgery and they come out depressed, and that's never been characteristic of them. Sometimes there are physical reasons why persons go through that, so I'm not addressing that in this study, and I want to tell you that there are times there are other things that you need in dealing with emotional issues. But let's talk about that is a product of environment, product of thinking. We've already talked about it's not a sin to be depressed. And if we could advance the slide. This is not a sin itself to be depressed. And I don't know if we got an issue up there. Yeah. Okay, I think we're good. Okay, there we go. You know, and what we'll find is that there are great occasions. You go through the book of Psalms. How many times do you see the psalmist going through a difficulty? He's not giving us his background. I'm not talking about his family life, you know. There may be times where you just go through like David, being forsaken by others. And whatever it may be, as you go through depression, as you have these feelings you're struggling with, you say, "Well, I feel like God's forsaken me, but I know that he hasn't. I feel like brethren have forsaken me, but I know that they haven't." There's something very valuable about going through that and being able to draw closer to God. Look at the psalmist, Psalms 124:2. "If it had been the Lord who was on," it says, if it had not been the Lord who was on our side when men rose up against us, then they would have swallowed us alive. When their wrath was kindled against us, then the waters would have overwhelmed us. The stream would have gone over our soul. In verse 8 it says, our help is in the name of the Lord who made heavens and earth. There's a value in going through difficult times. I don't enjoy it. Then I can even go thinking back in times, even as a young person. I remember going through times coming out of high school. I remember when I graduated from high school before I went into college. Just going through times of depression and discouragement, thinking I was different from everybody. And I was pretty different, but I've come to understand we're all different. We all got different ways. We're put together and kind of worrying about this and worrying about that and wondering, will life ever get better? We all go through those times. And those occasions happened to push me closer to God, happened to push me to a position where I started reading God's Word for the first time on my own. So emotional anguish and struggles can be of great value. Now let's talk about when depression becomes a sin. You may say, well, Larry, you just told me it's not a sin. Well, it can become a sin. As we've talked about the close relationship that it has with anger, anger is not a sin, but it can become a sin. Let me show you a passage. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26. The Bible says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. The danger we face in our emotions is when we begin to let Satan take over. Now, I'll tell you, I've seen people do that. I've seen people become angry, and they become so angry they don't want to see anymore. Their eyes are closed. They create their own reality. And when you create your own reality, and you live on that own reality as if it's real, then Satan has you in his control. And let me tell you, that won't be a good end. When you get caught in this kind of emotions, you think you can read minds. When you get caught in this kind of emotion, you think you know what people have done without you ever making any investigations at all. When you get caught in these kind of emotions, you feel justified in doing things, including even fighting God, and think that that's right. You do not want to give place to the devil. And so as we talk about this, as we want to talk about how God can help us in these times, how we can take various Christian experiences we have and look at the various types of depression and see how we as Christians deal with it. So let's talk about chronic depression if we could. Let's talk about characteristics of chronic depression. What I mean by chronic depression is where a person really just regularly struggles with this. Brethren, there are faithful brethren that regularly struggle with depression and probably be a characteristic of their life for the rest of their lives. I've known many. And if there was something they could do to get rid of this, they would do it. And there are various reasons why it's there. So I want to say again, you can have chronic depression and be faithful, but it's just like having a burden on you. It's something that you have to learn to deal with, and you need a group of people around you to help you and understand. But let's talk about some of the characteristics of what happens when you're depressed. I'm not saying this is necessarily chronic depression in Psalms 103, but we're talking about a time where a person is overwhelmed. Listen to some of the characteristics of somebody going through chronic depression. It says, for my days are consumed like smoke, and my bones are burned like a hearth. Here we see a misery, a hurt, the life seems to be just moving along. Verse 4, my heart is stricken and withered like grass, so that I forget to eat my bread. As people go through emotional times, there's a couple of ways they can react. Sometimes they react by not eating and losing weight. Sometimes they react by eating as an escape and the gaining weight. Again, I'm not trying to say people gaining weight or losing weight makes them depressed. We're talking about here the overwhelming emotion that this could be a symptom of that. Verse 5, because of the sound of my groaning, my bones cling to my skin. But look at the relationships here. Verse 6, I am like a pelican of the wilderness. I am like an owl of the desert. I lie awake and am like a sparrow alone on the housetop. Here, when a person is dealing with depression, relationships become difficult. If you're working with a person struggling with depression, you're going to find their reality changes. And if you understand it and you act with them in love, you can work with them. But many times the depressed person doesn't realize they do things to push people away and push people away and push people away, and they withdraw and withdraw and withdraw. Problem sleeping, described in verse 7. And you see what happens here, and the thing that I see as you go through time, you just can't, your mind can't let go of things. You've got these things you think about and you bring them back in your life, and you can't sleep, you can't let go of them, and you wish you could. You wish you had an erase button up here to erase it. Depression is a real issue that affects you in so many ways. Now, here's where depression becomes a sin, is when you decide to escape. And when you decide you don't want to face things anymore. You see, you're already burdened. It's almost like somebody loaded down and barely able to stand, and they view like the idea of trying to see accurately is putting additional burden on them. They says, I can't take any more burden. Let me show you some examples of people escaping. Now, here is the desire in Psalms 55. Not the psalmist is sinful here. But he says, fearfulness and trembling has come upon me. Horror has overwhelmed me. So I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I sure wish these burdens lifted. But let me tell you, there's some people, they can find a way to temporarily lift their burdens, and they're not good. You can go off and associate with evil people that will go into various sins that will give you temporary escape. Oftentimes it could be alcohol, it can be various forms of immorality, it could be it could even be things that are not necessarily sinful. You could just go into becoming a shopaholic. You know, but there are ways where you just want anything that can get you to escape, and you can get into great trouble that way. It's fascinating as you look at the King Saul. Here's a man that he oftentimes created his own reality. If you want to know when you're getting to a depression that is creating that which is not good in you, listen to Saul here, 1 Samuel 22:8. All of you have conspired against me, and there is no one who reveals to me that my son has made a covenant with the son of Jesse, and there is not one of you who is sorry for me, or reveals to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as it is this day. What happens when your emotion takes you over? You become the center of the universe. And you look at every problem that comes into your life as it relates to you. I'm going to tell you something, that's not healthy. You're not able anymore to even take on others' problems and see things from others' perspective. It becomes very dark. In this case, here, Saul, he could read minds, and everybody conspired against him. That David was conspiring against him. That his own son, Jonathan, who loved him dearly, he is now speaking against him and making charges against him. There is where you don't want to go. He can't see God. He can't see the people of God. He ends up making allies with some of the most wicked people he could. There's where you don't want to let this thing go. And that's where it can, where Satan gets an avenue in your life. And so again, this is the challenges. This is challenges. This is where you don't want to come. You know, it's fascinating. One of the ways you can see people that are unable to get out of this, you know, you can make your hurts become the focus of your life. Brethren, I want to encourage everybody. And you know what? I want people, if they want to talk with me about their hurts, I am glad to do that, to be a brother in Christ. There's a time we need to have good, knowledgeable people around us who understand us, and we can be who we are, and we can talk about what's on our hearts. But you know, some people make their hurts their whole focus in their life. And what I mean by that, I remember years ago, you know, I learned a lesson, that some people, you don't ask how you're doing. And what I mean by that, that's all they want to talk about. And again, you know, if you make your last hurts, you cling to them, your hurts like your last few cents, that doesn't make good sense. And what happens in time is you can find other people that all you do is you want to talk about your hurts, and that creates a very bad situation. You can become what I call part of the fellowship of the miserable. You get involved in self-pity. In Psalm 77 in verse 3, here, this man got an answer from God. But it's interesting, as you look at one of the characteristics of a person struggling with depression, they can become very negative. They love to complain. They love to see faults with others. They love to imagine hurt against them. And they just dwell on that. There's a lot of bitterness. There's a lot of complaining. There's tremendous memory of anything that was ever done to the person. Here in this context, it says, I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. You know, we read about David here in Psalms 142. He's hiding from Saul in a cave. Now, I'm going to tell you something. David had a right to be depressed. The entire nation of Israel against him. People just forsaking him and betraying him left and right. But listen to this. Psalms 142 and verse 3. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. And in the way which I walk, they have secretly set a snare for me. Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt nobody cares? Nobody understands the things I've gone through. Nobody's experienced what I've experienced. There's an old children's song that sometimes is related to self-pity. It says, no one loves me, everybody hates me, I'm going out and eat worms. It's sometimes you feel that way when you get caught up in this. You know, you just feel all wormy inside. You can't see anything good anymore. There's a way out of that. And so, the thing you got to overcome is fear. You know, like I said, you're already burdened and you're afraid of, if I've done something wrong, I just don't think I can make it. You need to see yourself. You need to see the good in you. You need to see the things you're not doing wisely. You need help. You need God's help. You need counsel. And there's a way to go through this and come out with strength. But let me tell you what happens, and this oftentimes happens in the home, it oftentimes happens with relationships. Sometimes people dealing with depression, they will not be corrected. And they end up in charge. And one of the worst things you can have happen in your home is for the depressed person to be in charge, particularly if you have children. One of the worst things you can have is to have a relationship with the depressed person and they can't be corrected. You're going to find out in a hurry. There are some things you can't tell them, like the truth. Denial becomes a way of life. In 1 Samuel 20, here Jonathan decided to tell his dad. By the way, this is the second time he confronted his dad. First time he confronted his dad reasoned with him, and he didn't try to kill David for a while. But again, he realizes his dad is trying to kill David, and he comes up to his dad and says, okay, Dad, let's reason. It says, and Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and said to him, why should he be killed? What has he done? When you have a depressed person out of control, as Saul was, and you question them, you get punished. Now listen to this. This is so sad. Verse 33. Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him. That's his son. By which Jonathan knew that he was determined by his father to kill David. You have a home where the depressed person rules, you can't tell them the king has no clothes. And if they say the sky is purple with green polka dots, you say, okay, the sky is green with purple with green polka dots. And you can't communicate with them. And you bury anger. You know why a lot of us lose our children? In my experience, again, this is my opinion, I see this issue being probably the number one issue of why many lose their children is because they created an environment in the home where their children cannot communicate with them and they come out angry. And then when they get out on their own, going to college or going something else, they want to get out of everything related to what their parents taught them. Now, Jonathan was a good man. He was a man of faith. He didn't let Saul influence him that way. Let's talk about the deception of anger and the deception of depression. A lot of people dealing with this, and I've seen this. I have seen this in congregations that I've been a part of where they didn't want to recognize there was a problem. Every one of them lost their children. Let's talk about how anger and depression can have various expressions. You know, the strong personality type, you know, the one that says what's on their mind, you know, if they're dealing with emotional issues, you pretty well know it because they're going to tell you. In the case of anger, you know, there are people very angry. They commit murder, suicide, physical violence, physical damage, bullying, cursing. You know, the person that's got the outward personality, if they're mad, they'll come in and stomp out the dust of the carpet and scream. Well, you know they're mad. But you know, not everybody has that kind of outward personality type. And there are those that are just as angry as the one that has the outward type, but they are a little more subtle in how they express their anger. They may be angry and slander a person, ostracize others, provoke others. But you know, there are other personality types. There are those that are more quiet. And they may smile and shake your hand and say, I love you, and then turn around. They're angry with you. They don't communicate it with you. And that's one of the things you'll see in this. There's not an honesty. There's not an openness. There's a burying. And they'll gossip, or they'll ridicule. They'll use sarcasm, criticism, careful revenge. And they're just as angry as the first person. It's just this is how they deal with anger. It comes out of their different way. And the thing that took me years to learn, but I learned it as I dealt with loved ones close to me. Some people can be angry, and what they do is they just withdraw. In some cases, they may go to bed for a week or two. Many times there's psychosomatic illnesses, there's despondency, there's withdrawal. What I'm telling you is that we've got to understand when we are having issues like this. We may be having issues and be living in Egypt. That is on denial. denial. Anyway, little joke there. But we can end up be living in a place where we don't want to see it. Let me give you one little test. I've used this on occasions from the pulpit over the years. You know how we communicate oftentimes reveals our heart, and sometimes we don't want to see it. Those who study communication says that there's three ways we communicate. There's the content of words. There's the tone of voice, and there's nonverbal body language. Did you know that the content of words is only 7% of communication for those who've studied this? Let me give you an example. Let's take three words. Put them together. We hear these a lot. I love you, okay? What have I communicated to you when I said, I love you? Let me put it this way. Tone of voice. I love you, or I love you. You know, I've changed the meanings there. How about this one? Nonverbal body language. Y'all ready to get this warm feeling? Ready? I love you, and don't you forget it. Feel good about that? And it's interesting, sometimes when we are denying things and we've got these feelings within, everybody else sees it but us. I'll never forget some business meetings I was in with a brother that I loved, but he really had some issues here. And we could be in a business meeting, and he could say some words that the words in itself, there was nothing wrong with those words, but the rest of us started getting sweaty palms because we realized we got a volcano over here ready to erupt. All I'm saying is let's be honest. Let's have others be honest with us about what is in our hearts. Last section this morning. Like I said, I got much more to talk about this subject, but I decided to break it up in more than one lesson so we'd have some time to talk about it. Let's talk about how to fight and win the battle within. Brethren, we've all had times, like I say, where we're ready to preach our own funeral and we think we're the last one on earth and nobody likes us anymore. And, you know, and to tell you, new students, you're going to feel the loneliness as you get here in class, and there are going to be times you're establishing new relationships. You're going to feel homesick at times. Most people go through that. Not everybody does. What do you do when you go through an emotional time? Psalm 77 is a great psalm to show you the struggle and how you win the struggle. Listen to the psalmist as he is going through the battle of the mind. He says, in the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. You remember that. You seek the Lord. Lord, my hand was stretched out in the night without ceasing. Now notice the struggle that he had. My soul refused to be comforted. I go back to this. Oh, I'm getting so frustrated. Let go of it. Have you ever done that? Let's let go of it. Quit thinking about it. You know, and if you've gone through it, you can't let go of it. Verse 3. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. Selah. You hold my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. What do you do when you're experiencing those things? Let me tell you what this person did. He went to God. Now listen to this. Have you ever questioned God? It's okay to complain to God. It's okay to question God. It's okay to pour out your heart to God with whatever you are thinking as you're in the end saying, God, teach me how to think. Listen to these questions. This guy, I can identify with this guy. Listen to this. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I meditate within my heart and my spirit makes diligent search. Listen to these questions now. Verse 7. Will the Lord cast off forever? And will He be favorable no more? Has mercy ceased forever? Has His promise failed forevermore? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has He in anger shut up His tender mercies? You know, here's a person that's basically saying, Lord, I'm not sure where I stand before You anymore. Teach me. And God does that. God will teach them. Raise those questions if you have them before God. And what happens, and this is the key to the battle, you know your God. You know His history. You know His history with the people of God. You know His history with you and how He has blessed you, and He has blessed you. And you got this irrational thing where you think the world is over, you can't even function anymore, and now you're thinking about God. Notice what happens. Verse 10, and I said, this is my anguish, but I will remember. I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. His right hand is powerful. His right hand always delivers. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old, and I will meditate on all of your work. And talk of your deeds. Your way, O God, is the sanctuary. Who is so great a God as our God? You can read Psalm 73 and you see a similar struggle. What you do when you're going through these emotional times, identify it. Say, look, I'm having a pity party. Identify it. Here I am trying to think that I know what my God has done and not doing when He's told me what He's doing and He's shown me His track record. Take the battle of the mind and win it. And what you may have to do is go back and repeat over and over and over and over again in your mind the truths that you have built up in you about who our God is. And that's why in good times it's best for us to spend a lot of times putting in our hearts now the knowledge of what our God is, our unchangeable God. Verse 14 says, you are the God who does wonders. You have declared your strength amongst the people. You have with your arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. And so again, that's kind of the lesson that I want to give to you this morning. I want to give you the lesson of how we can go to God and He will hear our voice. And we need to just to be honest with Him. Learn how to come out and take those hurts and describe and talk about to Him. One last area we want to talk about, then draw the conclusion. I want to talk about why we don't want to bury anger. Brethren, it's amazing to me when I see people that go through this, they can vividly remember things that happened to them 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I can remember dealing with a close loved one who by this time had reached close to 50 and they could remember things that happened to them when they were 16 years old. You need to understand, bearing anger is not a good thing. One of the things that does happen, if you get into bitterness, you can become a crazy person. The Bible says in 1 John 3:15, whoever hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. What we need to learn how to do. How do you let go? Yeah, we talked about this. Mine's on it. Mine won't let go. Can I tell you something about my God? Here my God wants to take burdens that we don't need to carry. When you bury anger, you're saying, God, I need to be the judge, jury, and executioner. I need to execute wrath on this person because I don't trust you to do it. That's what we're saying. Romans 12:17. This is hard. Repay no one evil for evil. You mean including the person that's hurt me? Repay no one evil for evil. You mean the person that's gossiped about me? Repay no one evil or evil. You mean talking about the person that has hurt my child and has affected them so dearly? Yes. Look at verse 19. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves. Now, this is a weakness of mine. I tell you, sometimes when I'm driving, I preach a lesson like this, and then I go out in traffic. There's sometimes I'm thinking, have I learned to live? Sometimes you could be judge, jury, and executioner. Somebody pulls out in front of you, you're mad at me. But there's much more serious things in life than traffic issues. You can learn as a pattern to hold all this hurt. And you won't hurt the other person. And I've seen some Christians, you've heard me talk about this from the pulpit before, you know, they know that we can't avenge ourselves, so they'll say, I forgive you, but I don't have to like you. Come on, where do you get that? Here, we want to hurt the person. And sometimes it's passive. Let me tell you a better answer. Give up the wrath. Put it in God's hands. God says, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. I cannot tell you the immense relief when you get the poison out of your life. The earlier you're able to do that, the younger you're able to do that, the better off you're going to be. Verse 20 says, therefore, if your enemy is hungry, kick him, right? No, it doesn't say that. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You will never regret doing this. We've all been hurt. You know what happens when we don't let it go? Oh, the memories. Vivid memories. The person we hate, the person we consider our enemy, gets in our dreams. We can be 1,000 miles from them, and they may not even know our name anymore, but they live with us, they sleep with us, they eat with us, and we feel all wormy and sad because we're thinking about what's happened. You never heal. And one way you know, sometimes people say, oh yeah, I've forgiven them, and then they can't stand to be around the person. And I tell you what happens to the person that does this. You become cynical, you lose heart. And let me tell you, I don't have it in the chart, the greatest curse that will happen to you, if you don't learn how to deal with it, you will infect your own children, and you'll infect your own friends. Typically, why I see people leave the church, it's been in this area, and I see people go negative, they go negative on the church, they go negative on their worship, they go negative on the preaching, they go negative on what people are doing and not doing, and it's really a matter of them. And they infect others. It's not a matter of if, but when they leave and who they take with them. And as I suggested earlier, you could lose your soul. You know what happens when you let go? You're going to confuse your enemy. They're going to go, what? He's being good to me. What? He's not noticing my presence and being angry at my presence. And I love Psalms 23. Psalms 23 is a passage that has greatly encouraged me. You know what I can do? I go on, let the past go on. I can serve God. I can be happy. I can be involved with others. And my enemy's sitting there like, wait. You know, they try to poke me, try to do something, not understand what's going on. Look at Psalms 23. We've quoted this for years, but notice the context. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. There's an old song back in the 60s. I think it's the old song, I'm Already Gone, about the person that decided to leave some girl he was dating. But I always liked the little statement in there, basically that so many times we spend our lives in chains and we don't know that all along we had the key. And certainly in these areas like this, you know, God has given us the key to free ourselves from a prison, a self-imposed prison. And we can have great joy and happiness if we'll learn this battle. And one more time, brethren, it is a battle. We'll conclude the lesson with Philippians 4, verses 8 and 9. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. You know what happens when we see the hurts that we have in our life as God does? It transforms us. It frees us. I love Hebrew writer basically saying, you think you've had hurts, you haven't yet resisted the bloodshed striving against sin. We look at the example of Jesus going to the cross. Brethren, where would we be without our hurts? Our hurts handled properly can make us into something very strong in the hands of God. We'll end here. We'll talk a little more next week, Lord willing, about this subject. But we do know that our God knows us. He knows how we're put together, and He is in the forgiving business. Let's start with you this morning. If you have something that has separated you from God, let this be the day where the God of peace can heal you. You start with being right with God. Whatever you've done, God will forgive you if you're willing to repent. If you never yet become a Christian, we'd love to take your confession of faith in Jesus Christ, baptize you for the remission of sins this morning. And Christian, and this is what the lesson is directed toward. If we got a bunch of junk building up in our lives, let's get it out. Let's release that desire for vengeance. Let us get our minds focused upon the great work God can do with us. And you may need help. There's nothing wrong with asking for help and asking for encouragement of other Christians. Our God knows us. Our God will bless us. But let us not live in denial. Let us see the next step we need to take. If we can assist you in any way, would you come as we stand and sing?